As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Okay, so today we're going to talk about something near and dear to anyone building a social product today, and that's engagement loops.
Okay, that doesn't sound so bad. Have engagement loops been brought up in antitrust lawsuits before?
No, but they probably should be. While we as product people love to optimize these loops to no end, especially those working in social, they may prove to be the cause of a lot of societal issues that are breaking down trust amongst our culture, and one of the reasons people have lost a lot of faith in tech improving the world.
Okay, I'm maybe not completely following, I'm partially following.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Facebook and the type of negative and extreme content that is now prevalent on the platform, especially in the Facebook Papers episode that we featured several weeks back.
Okay.
Well, what is driving the increasingly negative discourse on platforms like Facebook and Twitter?
Well, I guess that would be the engagement signals, how they're being used, that they're causing platforms to reward more and more polarizing and extreme content.
Right, so essentially engagement loops, right? What is causing us to become increasingly more depressed as we're using these apps, scrolling like zombies until our next dopamine hit?
Well, right, that would be these engagement loops.
And what is driving politicians to further their discourse to the extreme ends of the spectrum, pushing the boundaries of what we used to consider just social norms?
I guess the engagement loops?
In many ways, engagement loops are ruining the world. And in today's episode, we're going to explore why.
All right, well, let's get into it.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We are your hosts, Michael Sacca.
And I'm Mike Belsito.
So my goal in this episode is to convince you to at least consider that engagement loops are causing more harm than good when applied to massive social networks. That's not to say that engagement loops are bad, but in the context of connecting billions of people around the world on platforms like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, they're having negative effects on society that's degrading our trust in each other, the systems that govern. First, we should talk about engagement loops and what they are.
Right. So basically, in a system like Facebook, the simplest form of engagement is a like or some other interaction with your post, maybe a comment on something you've posted.
Yes, exactly. Or, you know, someone is joining your group or any kind of connection that is happening. So Facebook reaches out to you and says, hey, this person liked your stuff or commented on your post. Come back and check it out.
Right. And then you click through and admire your incredible post with the 10 likes and you can feel good about yourself.
Exactly, right? It's a little hit of dopamine. So someone acknowledged that they appreciated you and you feel good about yourself and you go back and keep posting or commenting or do whatever you do on the platform.
Seems pretty harmless, actually.
It is, right? We see this constantly at Dribbble where people simply post comments like, nice colors or great work, so clean. It's super positive, but rarely does it spark like a conversation, right? In fact, Design Twitter loves to rag on us for it.
Yeah, I think that seems kind of endearing, actually.
Yeah, you know, as time passes, it feels more and more wholesome in this increasingly negative world. But back to Facebook, right? We talked about this time period in our Facebook Papers episode before 2014, where Facebook was really focused on maximizing its ad server revenue and a user's time on site and was a generally pleasant place to hang out online.
Right. So they were prioritizing this polished video content that people would watch for hours on end, like YouTube.
Actually, there's a great clip of Charlie Warzel talking on Crooked Media's new podcast, Offline, that adds a little bit of color to this period.
The first ever thing that I wrote that pissed off Facebook was in 2013, and it was so, by today's standards, it's like preposterous. But it like I got like letter, like emails, angry emails from like the top.
Really?
And this is at BuzzFeed. It was a piece that looked into this idea of advertisers basically on Facebook have always had access to how many people see your post, but normal people don't. And I was like, why is that? And it's because I started like looking into the research on that. Most people don't see your stuff, or at least at that point didn't see other people's stuff. So it was basically like you were speaking to an audience of nobody, and that just infuriated Facebook because it was like, we don't want people to know that they're just like shouting into the void. And this was before Facebook was really like juicing the engagement stats, you know, to have people, you know, constantly in your comments and fighting with you and everything. They were furious about it, but they also wanted to just show me that, you know, that they had the best interest of everyone at heart, and that this was, you know, the connecting the world was going to be really generative. So they invited me to actually come out, and I ended up flying out there on BuzzFeed's dime, not Facebook's, and meeting with the newsfeed people. And again, this is like 2013.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I guess this was like off the record back then, but it's so, you know, anodyne that I don't mind sharing it now. Like, they basically were like talking to me about the different ways that they like, oh, you know, if we see this website kind of like coming up with this like spammy, you know, chummy kind of like crap content that's really outrageous, we're gonna like deprioritize it in the feed. And I was like, oh, you guys just like have your hands on dials all the time in these ways. And that was the first time for me that I was like, oh, none of this is organic. Like, none of this is all, you know, decisions being made by very specific people who nobody, you know, elected or in any way to make a lot of these decisions, who are kind of controlling the levers and levels of attention that, you know, everything gets.
Okay, so two things here. No one saw your content because they really wanted you to pay for distribution of it. And the content that you did see was content being produced by other media platforms who probably paid for the distribution and not necessarily individual people. And it was generally positive or kind of neutral in nature. And there wasn't a whole lot of engagement around it. So people were taking their social lives essentially off Facebook.
Okay, so this is what happens if Zuck can't read all of your personal messages to friends and family.
Exactly. So Zuck wasn't happy, and because he's a data vampire, he didn't like that his company wouldn't be able to digest every personal conversation you've ever had because you might be having it on Snapchat or Messages or some other platform. So how else would they continue to build a targeting profile so good it feels like they're listening to your inner thoughts?
I see. So Zuck just wanted to ensure that you kept those conversations on Facebook, and to do that...
Engagement loops. right? So starting in 2014, they started to optimize these engagement loops. And what they found was shifting to focus on conversation kept people on the site longer. They were utilizing other sites less, and they were more engaged, as in they literally couldn't log off.
But in order to get people to really engage, the content needed to be the things that got people so excited that they'd actually spend hours debating back and forth.
Right. So if you were to compare this to like fishing, right, the content's your bait. So on one hand, you have the basic worm, right? These were those long form posts, kind of neutral. People would consume it and they generally feel good. But it's nothing that they're talking about necessarily with their friends, and it's not forcing this engagement. On the other hand, you have this synthetic bait, kind of the heroin of bait, if you will. And it has no nutritional value, but the fish can't get enough of it. And that's the content that elicits these negative emotions in people so strong that they need to tell everyone why they're right, the other side's wrong, over and over and over again. And using this bait, they were able to catch a whole school of fish at a time. And honestly, at this point, you can't keep the fish away. So 7 years later, we've manufactured that bait so well that we've moved from heroin to fentanyl, and people are literally willing to risk death for another hit.
It's a bit morbid, but probably accurate.
Yeah, and everyone wants that next dopamine hit. And we've become so addicted to them, which we'll dive into actually in the next episode of this season. But engagement loops are what is driving the algorithms that are deciding what content to show people. And while they may have been developed and designed to connect people around the world, it's clear that the way that they're actually functioning is to create more and more division, creating echo chambers, deepening biases, and ultimately building catastrophic fragmentations within our society. It's a death march in many ways.
Okay, I want to dive in more, but we should probably take a quick break. So this season, we've talked a lot about engagement and ever-growing negative engagement that's causing unrest within our society.
Congress is trying to figure out how to solve this. They're holding hearing after hearing, trying to understand what can be done to rein in the control of these companies. Here's an exchange between Facebook's head of global security, Antigone Davis, and Senator Blumenthal from a recent hearing.
I want to be clear that this research is not a bombshell. It's not causal research. It's in fact just
This research is a bombshell. It is powerful, gripping, riveting evidence that Facebook knows of the harmful effects of its site on children, and that it has concealed those facts and findings. So I ask you to commit that you will make full disclosure.
And what is at the heart of these issues are the endless optimizations around engagement, which are continually leading users to be focused on content that's generally unhealthy for their mental health. And we as product people can change this. I mean, this is why we're talking about it today, because technology is ripping at the fabric of our society, and in some ways, it's our own fault.
So what are engagement loops doing in this case? Well, they're exploiting the insecurities of young teens and feeding them more and more unhealthy content because they're continually interacting with it. They're curious, right? They're grappling with these concepts of body image as their body is changing, and they often feel insecure and vulnerable.
And we're not giving them the healthy scientific content that explains what's happening to them and their bodies through puberty, or wholesome, encouraging content. No, we're giving them exploitive content that's driving them further down the rabbit hole of self-doubt and into content that's focused on things like self-harm, anorexia, even suicide, because that content's being designed to capture their attention.
And the algorithm doesn't necessarily know the difference between uplifting and unhealthy content, but it does know which bucket of content will absorb more of the user's time, and Facebook has trained it to calculate that and then exploit it. Now, Facebook isn't maliciously feeding teenagers content that will amplify things like self-harm, anorexia, and suicide on purpose. But because this group of teenagers has that thought or curiosity, it then responds by inundating them with relevant posts because it believes that's their current interest. So it wants to give them whatever it has that's relevant and that will keep them engaged. This is the engagement loop, right? We're displaying the content of interest that keeps people engaged, and then we're sending signal back to the content creators that this content is of interest, so they just keep making more of it.
You know, it's almost unfair the amount of self-control that these platforms actually force upon us as humans. I mean, this feeling of searching for something or clicking on something, knowing it's going to change your recommendation algorithm and you're going to be stuck looking at similar content for months. At a certain point, it doesn't even matter where we search for this information. Every company has a robust and ever-growing profile of engagement, and it's the algorithms that they use to target us.
It's like you're trying to eat healthier, but it's not that easy, right? If we've ever tried. And you have a whole history of unhealthy eating. So it takes an incredible amount of self-control to change those habits. But the way that we've designed these algorithms is to simply give you more of what you historically want. It's completely self-centered. So when you open the fridge for a snack or you open Instagram for content, it hands you the perfect slice of, say, a strawberry cheesecake or whatever content it is that's probably not that good for you. And even though you know you should push it away and just have an apple instead, it's incredibly tempting. And even though if you don't take the cheesecake at that moment, it's going to keep coming back with it every time that you open up that app, because it knows that once you give into the temptation, you're going to be there for a while consuming more and more content. Generally, this is content that's not necessarily wholesome for you.
And we've designed these algorithms. They don't have a mind of their own. There are people consciously behind them that are tweaking the levers.
And maybe that's one of the big problems here. It's also self-centered, right? The algorithm is obsessed with your thoughts, your curiosities, your obsessions, and your desires, and it doesn't care if those are harmful or productive. It just wants to give you more and more of what you want based on what you've previously wanted. Here's a segment from CNBC discussing some of these Facebook revelations.
Instagram's head of public policy responded to the report in a blog post, writing in part that the company is researching ways to pull users away from dwelling on certain types of Instagram posts. Can I just tell you, if any other company put a product out there and tested it on the market and saw that it then hurt people and then made, like, what are we? A bunch of guinea pigs? I mean, why is Facebook allowed to actually put their platform out there and then what? Change it in real time as they realize how damaging it is to the American public and perhaps create suicidal ideation among American teenagers? This is crazy.
Well, there's no perhaps to it, Mika. Facebook admits in internal documents that girls report 13% that had suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideations, that Facebook pushed them there.
But we were talking about engagement loops and their effect on society.
Right. So let's talk about politics, which is where much of the fabric of at least the North American society is really starting to break down, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I feel like that's valid.
So I'm going to argue that engagement loops are one of the main causes of our ever-growing political divide.
All right, you've got me listening.
So engagement loops and the over-optimization of them are what is driving the content feed on social sites today. The feed has been optimized to send signals back to content creators and to keep the viewers on the site as long as possible, generally to maximize ad revenue. This is the loop that drives the content creation and consumption, as we've discussed.
Okay, I'm with you.
So two things are happening here, right? Content creators are given constant dopamine hits so that they create more content more often. User-generated content is literally the lifeblood of any social platform. Because of the time decay on most sites, this content's live for less than a day, if that. And that's common knowledge to creators that they need to create more and more content every day, even within the day, to get those dopamine hits and to stay relevant. So if people aren't constantly interacting with your account, then your account becomes less and less relevant and may not be selected by the algorithm for your followers' next session. So they need to create more and more content at a higher cadence to prove that they are the most interesting topic to their followers at any given moment. And they're competing now on a global media platform.
All right, this is all making sense.
Okay, now how does it relate to politics after the break?
So before the break, we were discussing how engagement loops are there to encourage both content creators and consumers to create and consume more content.
Right, but as we've amped up those engagement loops, we've also seen our politics become more divided and more focused on the extreme ends of the spectrum of ideology. This is happening around the world, where we even just saw violent clashes in France around a candidacy announcement of a far-right candidate.
French far-right presidential candidate Éric Zemmour is holding his first rally this Sunday, just 5 days days after announcing his bid for office. The former TV pundit is a very controversial figure. He's been convicted by the French justice system twice for inciting racial hatred.
Right, and that rally then turned violent, just as we've seen across the United States.
Now, social media companies aren't entirely to blame for this, but I don't think they're innocent in this either. They've created the system where our politicians are now professional shit posters, for lack of a better term, in order to break through all of the noise.
Right. And because they're playing in this global arena, they're not just trying to put together a better message than their opponent on the news cycle. They're actually competing with every form of content creator on the planet for their attention.
And in order to get it, in order to break through the noise, they need to be more extreme, more enraging, and elicit more engagement than anyone else in politics or entertainment or even music.
And the best engagement doesn't actually come from their own audience, who generally agrees with everything they say. It comes from the people who dislike their views and opinions, and the engagement comes from them arguing or trying to dunk on them, which then algorithmically amplifies their message further.
Exactly. So the system was then created to boost content that people were engaging with, is now boosting more and more content that people are engaging with because they're enraged at it. And the game becomes who can post the most egregious opinions each and every day, pushing the lines of decency out further and further to the left and the right so that they can continue to stay in the spotlight. And we keep tiptoeing on that line just far enough, but then the next day someone comes along and they push it out even further.
So we have an attention economy that's rewarding people who are evoking the greatest amount of negative emotion online and then using that to boost their status.
So with politics, we've seen this play out as parties have moved more and more to the polar opposite ends of the spectrum because moderate voices are, well, not that enraging. They're rational. They're, you know, middle of the road. And they're also just quite boring in comparison to the nut jobs like Marjorie Taylor Greene or the professional shit posters like Ted Cruz.
And then we have the media itself, which in order to break through the noise has leveraged the same strategy. You have people on the way right like Candace Owens and Ben Shapiro who have mastered the art of delivering the most reprehensible takes with enough built-in consensus that excites their followers, but it enrages their haters so much that they and a small handful of other way right-wing publications own the top 10 most engaged posts almost every day on Facebook.
On the opposite side of the spectrum, the Democratic Party has moved to be much more progressive with voices like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and AOC leading the charge online by engaging in social media dunk contests and carefully crafted takes designed to draw a reaction from their Republican colleagues and their followers.
All right, I'm with you. I agree it's not entirely the social media company's fault, but they have created this national and global ecosystem where bad behavior is actually rewarded. And the reward is worth millions and millions of dollars if they successfully gain or hold power.
Exactly. And politicians are encouraged to focus on what divides us rather than what unites us, because it's those issues that divide us that reward them with visibility. And if they choose to take the high road and drop the us versus them narrative, well, they risk being algorithmically dropped and thus becoming irrelevant to the national conversation.
And while that would most likely lead to better governance, politics is an attention and notoriety game. And today, that battle is fought 24/7, 365 days a year on both sides, and it's a never-ending slog of social media posts.
Okay, I'm satisfied that we've made it this far, and we're going to talk about product addiction coming up, which will start to touch on some of the solutions here, and probably even more of the problems, but don't leave discouraged. There's hope, and we'll start diving into more next time on Rocketship.fm.
We thank you for listening to this episode of Season 11 of Rocketship.fm, all about the breakdown of trust that technology is causing in our systems, culture, and society, and what we could do about it.
For Mike Belsito, I'm Michael Sacca, and this is Rocketship.fm. Thank you so much for listening to Rocketship.fm. It is your support that keeps the show going. If you can, take a second and leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps out the show so much. We're also part of the Podglomerate Network, and if you'd like to listen to more great shows from the Podglomerate, go to thepodglomerate.com to see the full show listings.
Rocketship.fm is produced in partnership with Product Collective, a community for product people. Go to productcollective.com and get access to our weekly newsletter, live video interviews, Slack community, product job board, and a whole lot more. Again, just go to productcollective.com.